Now, the Now Show!
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. I'm Steve Pant.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
And first this week we have a public service announcement because we here at the BBC have a duty to report to you on the subject of the Millennium Bug. We've been asked to keep you, the public, informed on how to combat this potential computer menace.
In order to see whether the BBC's computer systems are ready for the Millennium Bug, we're going to follow current government advice and wind Radio 4 forward 13 months, setting our clock to just before midnight on New Year's Eve, 1999. OK, you ready?
This is Radio 4. The time is just after midnight on January the 1st, 1900. I'm sorry, I mean 2000. I mean, oh my God, the studio clock is spinning. The computer has vanished. Ah, where am I? Who are you? Are you from the future?
Come with me if you want to live.
So I hope that's reassured all listeners. And now, Busman and Quantic.
Tony Blair got a nice surprise this week. Four of his cabinet turned out to be gay. Or, as the Sun put it, four of his cabinet turned out to be skeletons in the closet.
So that's closets in the cabinet. God help us if Ron Davies gets a makeover. It'll be new wardrobe for cabinet closet Welsh dresser.
Come out, gay MPs, wherever you are. It's for the public good, because keeping your private life private means, quote...
For politicians, this can lead to the possibility of blackmail, pressure or coercion. The Sun, page 4. The Sun, page 8.
We also have in our possession a tape of a conversation between Nick Brown and a rent boy. We have chosen not to publish details.
Elsewhere, Richard Littlejohn, the Sun's Mr. Lovely, attacks gays while defending a driver's right to drink. He writes, I hesitate to call anyone a fat puff. Before doing a load of gay bashing.
I've got nothing against these gays. Sorry, Jews. Sorry, blacks. I meant to say Pakis. Did I say Pakis? I meant Catholics. No, people whose index fingers are longer than their ring fingers. Oh, sod it. I don't like anyone who doesn't look like me.
Richard Littlejohn argues that he isn't homophobic. There's a contrary argument. Yes, he is.
Meanwhile, the Sun surpassed itself with a phone-in number that said... Quote.
Are you a gay MP who'd like to come out? The Sun has set up a hotline for ministers and MPs who are secretly homosexual. Don't worry about the cost. We'll call you back.
Now, there are some out political types, like Matthew Paris, who righteously outed Peter Mandelson. That's Matthew Paris. So keen that MPs should be out... that he waited till he left Parliament to out himself.
Matthew Paris, who you may remember, was the MP who claimed he could live for a week on the income of an unemployed man. Sadly, after a week, the unemployed man left him.
Actually, to be fair, several unemployed men around Soho live on an MP's salary. Not that an MP's salary is that high. Nick Brown couldn't afford to pay the rent boy. Is he in trouble now? I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Nick Brown couldn't afford to pay the rent. Boy, is he in trouble now.
The Now Show.
Thank you very much. Now, Britain's most famous unemployed person is 50 today. Prince Charles has had half a century... He's had half a century to appreciate the downside of the hereditary principle. You have to wait for people to die before you get to do anything. This doesn't apply to any other job.
So, as you can see, I'm a fully trained accountant. I've passed all my accountancy exams and I'm fully prepared to take on this post.
Yes, that's excellent. You certainly seem well qualified. The only problem, of course, is that our old accountant is still alive.
I see. Well, in that case, I shall have to land a faction in Wales, raise an army and force your old accountant to a decisive battle to settle this matter.
You are but a fool, sirrah. Mr. Blenkinsop commands the love and respect of the entire financial sector. I, and many in marketing and personnel besides.
There are many in this company who cry out for change, sir. Many junior staff and certainly a large portion of the sales division are with me.
Then let it come to battle. And by God, sir, you should... Yes, what is it?
I bring news from the account department, sir. It seems Mr. Blenkinsop has fallen into a vat of Malmsley wine.
My liege, then thou art appointed company accountant. Of course, Prince Charles denies the accusation that he wants the Queen to abdicate. But look carefully at the wording of this. He's denying he wants her to abdicate. But there is another possibility.
The Queen's motorcade passed through the middle of Stevenage at 3:15 p.m. Charles Windsor Oswald was waiting in the local book depository. Police caught him just in time.
Die, you mother!
That's enough of that sort of language, Mr. Windsor.
What sort of language? I was just saying, die, you mother. What did you... what did you think I meant?
It is, of course, outrageous to suggest that in any way Charles would want anything to happen to the Queen. The royals are very careful about these things. As a well-known example, Charles and the Queen don't ever fly in the same plane, which doesn't really tie in with the new slimmed-down monarchy designed to save the taxpayer money. In fact, I can imagine it being rather annoying.
British Airways final call for flight 347 to Bermuda.
Ooh, that's us.
Now boarding at gate 14.
Oh, it's me. come on, this one.
Come on.
No, you'll have to go down to Gatwick and get a charter.
I'm not going Air 2000 again with a bunch of people shouting, "Oi, big ears, come and join in the birdie song." Why don't you go chartered? Why do you think they call it Monarch Airlines?
Of course, the 50th birthday of the heir to the throne is a big event, and there are always specially commissioned poems to mark these great occasions. This time, these have come from many luminaries, including, of course, Pam Eyre's.
Oh, I don't half feel sorry for Charles. Not king yet, but already 50. I bet he can't wait to get crowned and stop hanging about looking shifty. Oh, I don't half feel sorry for Charles. At his age, most think of retirement. But he'll never try and cold-bloodedly get the Queen out of the way. Although I do wonder what the Windsor Castle fire meant.
Now, in the wake of the Republicans' poor showing in the midterm elections, Newt Gingrich has announced that he's to give up his post as Speaker of the House of Representatives. It really is one of the most admirable things about American society, that having a ridiculous name has never been a bar to holding high office.
Goodbye, Mr. Gingrich. All I know is your first name is Newt. I don't know who you were or what you did, but I'm sure you were a hoot. 'Cause if Britain was like America, we'd have more fun and games. The government would be full of people with funky, interesting names. Give me Lawrence Eagleburger and a small order of fries. Give me Callista Flockhart, 'cause it's time to Americanize. Please welcome the Prime Minister, Zeke Blair, and his wife, Cherie Blossom Clocksucker Underwear. J. is Windsor, Winding Mangle, Bollock Petunia, and her husband, Prince Philip's Lady Chef
Junior.
Al Gore's wife's name is Tipper. Maybe her parents wanted a truck. Here is the news at 10, read by Trevor McDuck. Please welcome the Chancellor, Zuckdee Mindrover Brown. The Minister for Trade, Chuck Z. Blumenwald Flugeltown. Here's the Queen Mother, Mary Waggle Fraggle McBiscuit. We were going to do one for Mendelssohn, but on second thoughts, let's not risk it.
And now it's time to let him into your hearts, into your minds, and into the very fibre of your conscious mind. Ladies and gentlemen, Alan Parker, Urban Warrior.
Cheers, kicking it down, vibes on your side, no damage, hello, etc. Channel 4 this week been going on about trying to get young people to do music. You want to know the truth about music? Yeah, maybe music can provide some of the answers, right? I don't know. I used to be in a band myself. They've all left now. It's just me, I'm carrying on. The highlight of being in the band was when we were in Birmingham recording our first six songs, and I dedicated those songs to the Birmingham Six. because we're in Birmingham. We were six songs. That's why it's the same. The difference, admittedly, the actual Birmingham Six, they got released. Apart from that, it's very similar. Yeah, Polydor Records. I think you know what I'm saying. Yeah. Excuse me, mate, you're a handsome-looking bloke. Are you gay?
No.
No, well, you should be. Yeah. I am out campaigning for more men to become gay. It's not enough that the cabinet... more men should become gay. For sexual freedom reasons. If more men were gay, it would be more socially acceptable to be gay. And it would improve the odds for those that are left as well. Yeah. I'll say the band, right? We split up. I'll get this off my chest, right? I was lead vocals, shouting, Andy bass, Stu guitar, Al drums, no brass section, no thank you. Twoot, 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 what's that going to achieve? Nothing. Right, and Andy, right, he's all right, but he likes the Beatles. He's one of those blokes, you know. Yeah, a lot of people like the Beatles, yeah. I'm not so, but Andy really likes them, you know. He doesn't just pretend to like them when he's talking to a girl like a normal bloke, you know. And also, on that, right, he's Paul McCartney-ish in that Beatles spectrum of things. And there's nothing wrong with Paul. I'm not saying shoot Paul McCartney. I'm just saying, Paul McCartney, you know. You wouldn't trust him in a tank, would you? But real life, push comes to shove. The Panzers are rolling down Shaftesbury Avenue again, right? And you are all that stands between the death of democracy and Holborn Tube, yeah? And you're there, willing to cop a napalm sandwich in the eye, if that's what it takes to give the people trying to get on the Northern Line a few extra seconds. And you've got the choice of one member of the Beatles to stand with you and help load your bazooka. I'm just saying, it wouldn't be Paul McCartney, would it? Anyway, Andy's like that, and it all came to a head. We're rehearsing, Andy starts going on and on again about tunes and bass lines, chords. I had enough. I went, Andy, shut it. A band is a democracy. That means you've got to do what you're told, right? And in this band, I shout, you strum in the gaps. Let's not overcomplicate things. He walked out, and I thought, sod him, we don't need him. We carried on. No bass, just guitar, drums, shouting. And it was brilliant, right? And then what happened? Stu, guitarist, strumming really hard on his guitar, and one of the strings, and their metal on the guitar, snapped, like, really suddenly. So he left the band. And then it's just me and Al. Al's drumming, I'm shouting, and it was brilliant. And it turned out we didn't need the music bits. And then Al, comrade Al, stands up, and he's brilliant bloke, Al. He's deaf but passionate, you know. And he's got two arms, like a lot of drummers, but he does the same with both, you know, and he chucks the sticks up. He didn't catch them so much, but he cares, you know. And he stands up and says, Alan, I don't want to be in the band no more neither. And I said, I know you, Al. You're stupid, but you're a good bloke. If you didn't want to be in this band, you'd have left hours ago when the others went. And he said, I don't want to be in the band. And I said, well, why don't you get out of that bloody door then? And he started to walk towards that door, but I knew in my heart he wouldn't do it. And at the last minute, he's getting towards that door. He turns. And I went, yeah, Al, music is the instrument of our salvation. And he went, no, Alan, I don't want to be in the band. And I said, well, why didn't you get out of the bloody door? And then he explained, it's because it's his room. He just had to come back in. Yeah. My greatest disappointment, though, musically speaking, the last few years, was the assassination of Phil Collins. It didn't happen. It should have happened. Look at the facts. Fact, 30 million people have albums by Phil Collins. Fact, 30 million people voted for Adolf Hitler. You draw your own conclusions. Genesis, genocide. Need I say more? Cheers, see ya.
Hunt and Dennis.
This week, the first case against mobile phones came to court. A scientist tried to force mobile manufacturers to put health warnings on the side. Mobile phones are on the verge of being the new cigarettes.
Does anyone mind if I make a call?
Yeah, if you must.
Don't you know about secondary radiation?
Yeah, it's not just your own brain you're irradiated, right? It's everyone else's around you.
Okay, I get the message. I'll just have a fag then.
There's even going to be filter-tipped mobiles soon. Mobile phones with a radiation shield over them to cut down on those harmful microwaves. But like with cigarettes, it'll take time for these to catch on. When they brought filter tips in the 50s, real men thought it was sissy to smoke them, and smoking untipped was seen as a badge of masculinity, as indeed was being able to spit bits of your own lung further across the ward than anyone else. Of course, only people who were smoking cigarettes before the early 50s, when the cancer warnings were first issued, have a case for suing, because since then it's always been clearly stated that smoking is dangerous. And that's totally stopped people smoking ever since. Because that's the weird thing, right? It simply won't matter if the mobile phone companies start putting warnings on the side of phones. It's not going to stop people using them.
Excuse me, are you aware there's a health risk from using that mobile?
Ah, it's all rubbish, isn't it? There's always something in there. We're saying breathing's a health risk next.
No, it is a health risk to have that mobile pressed right against your head.
Oh, yeah, but I never have it pressed right against my head, right? Because I've got this huge lump by my ear. I can't get it nearer than about 3 inches.
Oh, well, that's all right then. Sorry to have bothered you, mate.
Yes, the future's bright. The future's the size of an orange.
A report this week revealed that due to their diet of television, and also, I suspect, the frankly ridiculous names of their politicians, Americans are finding it more and more difficult to tell fact from fiction.
CNN News, I'm Chad Bradwald.
And I'm Veronica Putz. Today's news is brought to you by the letter Z and the number 4.
Tonight, large dinosaurs have been brought to life again by an old man with a dodgy Scots accent. In Iowa, a small alien was found in a wardrobe and flew over the moon on a bike.
In Connecticut, a celibate woman living with 7 very short men was murdered by an apple. And finally, a major criminal who was dressing up and pretending to be a ghost has been foiled by meddling kids and a semi-articulate dog.
Tony Blair doesn't want Ken Livingstone to be mayor of London because he has a downer on Ken. This is a familiar situation for Ken because Margaret Thatcher had a downer on him too. And you never see Margaret Thatcher and Blair in the same room.
At the GLC, Ken Livingstone brought Thatcher to her knees with evil acts of left-wing subversion like cheap bus fares and breeding newts.
There's no mention of Ken's pets this time round, but you know what they say. No newts is good newts.
Thatcher got her revenge on Ken. She abolished the GLC and turned its old headquarters into an aquarium, where she will live once she reverts into her alien form. And the time comes to lay her monstrous eggs. It should be simple. Tony Blair is the people's prime minister. Ken Livingstone would be the people's mayor. Now you'd think, to quote the old song, people's prime ministers who need people's mayors are the luckiest people's prime ministers in the world. But no, Blair is scared. And if you want proof of this, look at the people he doesn't mind having the job of mayor. Richard Branson, Jeffrey Archer, General Pinochet, Darth Vader, Satan.
Here are some things a mayor can do.
Get mistaken for a town crier and be followed by little boys shouting, "Where's your bell then?"
Be friends with a huge cat in a pantomime and shout, "Oh no, it isn't," at 2 old men in dresses.
Yeah, if Ken doesn't get the job, there is always Panto. Although it has to be said that 5 miles from London and still no sign of Dick might be a better line for Ron Davies.
Dan and Nick.
People, I have a sad story to tell. I am a woman who married into hell. My husband drives me mighty by degrees, mouthing off against every foreigner he sees. All cars and legs and hair unnecessarily curled. He's got the biggest mouth in the entire world. Oh, it's a crummy life, 'cause I'm Jeremy Clarkson's wife. Wearing trainers made for someone age 13. Too much chin where his neck should have been. But I could take it all. I wouldn't really mind at all. Hell, I'd even give him a kiss, if only he'd stop finishing his sentences.
Like this.
Well, this week sees the 10th anniversary of the magazine which has taken investigative journalism to new heights. Namely, Hello Magazine.
Now, Hello, I think, fully deserves to be the publishing success of the decade. It's tapped into a fundamental human characteristic. No. The desire to slag off other people's houses, hairstyle and pets? Yes!
Reading Hello is an immensely cathartic experience, because Hello gives hope to us all. What could be more comforting than seeing the pig-ugly child of a beautiful couple? Or realising that even the most glamorous of women marry short, fat men who appear to polish the tops of their hairless pates with Mr. Sheen. Reading Hello is therapy.
Tell me, how do you feel?
Well, it's useless and hopeless.
Just lack of self-esteem.
Yeah, well, yeah, I suppose.
Right, okay. Now, look, let me just show you this picture of Princess Stephanie of Monaco.
Princess Stephanie?
No. That's a bloke.
Yep, we're going to have you feeling better in no time.
So we say, happy birthday, Hello. Now, apart from anything else, Hello provides an outlet for those stories that you just wouldn't find anywhere else, like this, which is possibly my favourite ever story, which came complete with a full set of glossy photos taken in his stately home about the Earl of Carnarvon. Now, apparently the Earl of Carnarvon was doing an inventory of his castle. As you do. He was probably letting it to students or something. Worried they might walk off with his tiger skin. Anyway, he was doing this inventory and he thought he'd finished it. And he turned to his butler and he said, "We've finished it." And the butler said,
"No, my lord, we have forgotten the ancient Egyptian stuff."
As you do. And lo and behold, behind a blocked door between the smoking room and the drawing room, they found a forgotten cupboard. And unlike most cupboards, this didn't contain a hoover and an ironing board. Oh, no. It contained over 300 statues, bowls and religious artefacts from the tombs of the pharaohs who ruled Egypt over 3,000 years ago. A hoover and an ironing board. How do you forget 300 statues? Anyway, this story gets worse because it apparently involves the curse of the pharaohs. The curse of the pharaohs. I love that. Because all this stuff came from the tomb of Tutankhamun, which a former Earl of Carnarvon broke into on an expedition. And there is this terrible curse that whosoever robs the pharaoh's tomb shall be afflicted with a very bad memory for where he's put things. Now, actually,
10 of the former Earl's expedition died in mysterious circumstances, including the Earl himself, who died in a Cairo hospital. And when he died, all the lights in Cairo went out.
That's not mysterious. That's what happens when you die. Great story in The Observer this week. A New York rabbi on the run for 10 years has finally been caught in Israel. His crime? Stealing from the rich to give to the poor.
Rabbi Hood, always feeling guilty. Rabbi Hood, his fish is gefilte. His mom makes matzah balls, and asks why he never calls. Rabbi Hood.
Rabbi, we have decided to call ourselves the Merry Men.
The Merry Men? What is this? Nakajo Fall?
It was Little John's idea.
Little John? Have you seen this guy? Jesus, I mean, who thinks of these names? I need to see my minstrel.
Here comes Much the Moyle's son.
Don't talk to me about it. It makes me nauseous.
Rabbi, we must go and rescue Maid Marian.
I can't. I'm coming down with a tumor.
Do it for Anna, Rabbi.
Anna? Don't talk to me about Anna. Last time I got Anna, she slapped my face.
Come on, Rabbi. If you rescue her, you can marry her.
Matt, what are you, my mother? Give me one good reason.
She's 40 years younger than you.
I'll do it. Come on, guys.
The Now Show.
Well, that's it, except to say that the new Oxford Dictionary of Slang's been published this week. It contains more than 10,000 colloquial expressions, as well as their definitions and histories.
Yes, some useful nuggets in there. Apparently the word screw has meant a prison warder for over 190 years.
The first usage of cooking the books was noted in 1636, and bum, meaning bottom, has been around since the 14th century.
Do you know, I find that genuinely interesting, isn't that sad? In fact, the main thing that you notice, really, is that most slang words are actually very old. So we decided to ask our studio audience here tonight for any new slang words that they've either heard or they know or that they could invent. And we'd like to read some of them out.
Chumble, meaning belly button fluff. Probably all the chumble myself. There is a little bit of chumble. There.
This one, I suspect there might be a slightly personal element to this one. The word rod, a rod, to mean an incompetent manager. it's just if Rod's listening, there's no surname attached. E.g., I've been rodded. I don't think that means I've been incompetently managed, actually.
Spithold. It's good, really. Spithold, which means a sexual partner in your house on a short trial. Yeah, I might try that.
Any spitholds in?
There's a great one here. This is a great one from Robin, who claims to be a professor, but I'm not sure. The slang third way means bisexual. As in, he's a bit, you know, third way.
That's excellent.
I do like this one. The word arsenal, meaning to be humiliated in your own home. So there we go. Some marvellous suggestions there for the next edition. And we've got one more bit of slang, which is the phrase, that's the end of the show, which is sort of showbiz slang for we've completely run out of material. So thank you very much indeed for listening, and good night!
The Now Show is hosted by Steve Hunt and Hugh Dennis and brought to you by Jane Busman, Dan Friedman, Simon Munnery, David Quantick and Nick Romero. It was developed by Bill Dare with the producer, Aled Evans.
If you want tickets to come and join the studio audience for The Now Show, we record every Thursday from now till Christmas in central London. The ticket phone line is 08700 100 400.